When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture. Luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Solving the Maddie mystery, the Spanish Lynx and the German monster. John Clark spent a year traveling around Portugal, Spain and Germany, probing the links between an extremely dangerous German and the likelihood that he snatched Madeleine McCann in May 2007. It is the subject of a new book called Solving the Maddie Mystery. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, John Clark himself. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Josh. How are you getting on this morning?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed. The Madeleine McCann story has gripped nations like none other. You were one of the first journalists who were involved in the original reporting, of course.
That's right. And I think you called it my Solving the Maddie Mystery. I wish I could. I think the book's actually called My Search for Madeleine, because I continue to try and solve this crime. And it's one, as you say, that I've been on right from the beginning, from the very first day, in fact, that she vanished. And it's been quite an odyssey, actually, backwards and forwards to Portugal, goodness knows how many times, certainly dozens, to try and understand what happened to her.
I mean, paint me a picture, if you can, of what it was like when you, what piqued your interest, as it was, to go down there and report on this tragic disappearance to begin with, and how it all unfolded and basically has become, you know, a part of the nation's psyche for over a decade now.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, Giles, I wish it did pique my interest, but simply I woke up at goodness knows what time at 6:30 or 7 when the Mail foreign desk phoned me and said, look, can you get down to Portugal and cover the story? So from my point of view, I was just doing a job. And I, when they said there's a child gone missing, you know, one assumes that she's fallen into a swimming pool or, you know, she'll be found or whatever. But so, you know, it's a kind of 3.5-hour drive or wherever before I lived in Ronda. And I assumed that by the time I got there, it would have been solved. But, you know, as it happened, as we now know, it's probably one of the, you know, biggest missing person mysteries in history. And I think when you arrive, you realize it's a tiny little sort of seaside village, not dissimilar to some of the villages we know here in Andalusia. And you just, you feel so odd to imagine that a little girl of that age would just simply vanish into nowhere. And then, of course, I very briefly met the family that morning. And then later that evening, there was a press conference, and you could just see the trauma this poor couple were going through. And even though they held it together, which I think caused quite a lot of grief in the long run for them, because the Portuguese just couldn't quite understand why they weren't losing it more. I think that they quite clearly, you know, living everyone's nightmare, every parent's nightmare.
I mean, it went from being, as you said, a case that you thought would be pretty easily solved or found, she would have been found, or, you know, in one way or the other, to this basic media scrum, media circus, and the way that, as you said before, perhaps the fact that they, in your words, held it together, counted against them with the Portuguese officials.
Yeah, I mean, you make an amazing point there. I think there were probably 100+ journalists there for those early weeks, and I've never seen a press pack like it. I mean, I've been on plenty of jobs around the world when I used to work for the Mail or Mail on Sunday, and what was incredible was to arrive to find not just all the usual tabloid newspapers, but all the broadsheet newspapers and indeed radio stations and TV stations, but they're camped out for months on end. In fact, one of our Olive Press reporters, Fiona Govan, who you've met, I think, Giles, she was down there for 4 months for the Telegraph. And you just don't imagine that a broadsheet would have had, you know, a reporter camped out there. But that was the mystery that it was and still is to this day. It's such a mystery and such an unusual story that would gather so many column inches, not just in England, but around the world, everywhere. I mean, there's nowhere I've been where the subject hasn't come up, you know, whether it's in, you know, I off the top of my head, I can't think where we've been, but a lot of countries we've been to, people know that case. And in fact, young people, Giles, you know, the Netflix documentary that I helped in, so many young people watched that and sort of said, you know, the people in their sort of teenagers and early 20s who were as fascinated by it as we all were.
Let me run this one by you then. One of the reasons is the fact, if you look at 2007 when Mighty Ghost is appearing, you can perhaps say, because people have had theories, and from the weird and wonderful avenues and the dark corners of social media, people have thrown stuff online about Madeleine McCann that in a way that perhaps we didn't have with you know, I'm thinking about, you know, the little boy who went missing in the Greek islands 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Yeah. And this has become a social media event as well, as you found yourself when you started investigating.
Do you know, Giles, it is absolutely fascinating. As you say, I think they worked out that it's when Twitter first launched in 2007, and it sort of became, and social media, as you say, grew and grew and has grown to the point that everyone feels part of it. And as you know, I think they call them trolls or you know, keyboard warriors, will immediately like to spread conspiracy theories as they do on anything. And so there's this sort of, you know, understandably, the Portuguese police looked into the family from the beginning, and they knew probability-wise that someone in the family or close to the family could have been involved. But as it's turned out, in the end, they found not one shred of evidence to suggest it was true, and the family were no longer made suspects. But what's happened is that there's this whole kind of underworld of people, and thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, who continue this sort of myth that the family did it, and they lurk in dark spaces underground, and they've actually, some of the worst in jails are in Spain, here amongst us, on the Costa del Sol. And they will spend their entire lives just trashing anybody that has an alternative view to them, that perhaps looks at the case in a slightly wider scope than they have, was just become fixated on their so-called PJ files, the PJ files of the police, which have been heavily redacted, by the way. And I don't believe, anyway, in the first case, as you probably don't, that the Portuguese police did such a great job, did they? So I don't think one should just put all our stall on the PJ files. We should perhaps be looking outside of those, don't you think?
Looking outside of those, you looking at this took you across several countries of Europe, and through investigation, you came up with one man who kept featuring Christian Bruckner, and this is quite an interesting individual, to put it mildly. And it took you actually to Germany itself. Was it last year or this year?
Yeah, Germany recently, actually, Giles. I was in Germany in June, so I actually very fortunately got to spend over 3 hours with the main prosecutor, Hans Christian Wolters, who very kindly allowed me to put no less than 42 questions to him on the case. And he got a proper grilling. I would say that the German police, of course, had looked into this guy since 2017. And what we must remember here, that the police looked into this guy for an entire year before they even went to the prosecutor in Germany and said, look, we think we've got enough evidence in this guy to take this forward. And then the prosecutor joined for another 2 years before they even had their public appeal in June last year. So they had a public appeal to find various things that they thought the public might be able to help on. But they've already got an enormous stash of evidence against this guy. And let's not feel any pity for someone who's got a criminal track record as long as his arm, 17 or 18 convictions, including child molesting, including rape, and many other pretty heinous crimes. And this is a guy that travelled willy-nilly all around Europe. And as you say, I've been indeed around three or four countries looking into him now. And, you know, he got away with a lot of things. And dare I say it, murder. And that's what the German police think. And they, from the beginning, said that this guy murdered Madeleine McCann. And we need you guys to help us close this off and give us some more background. And that's what they did from June last year. And they've been working very hard on the case.
And you went to Germany. I believe it's the former East Germany that this particular gentleman was operating out of. And is there something, I've seen some pictures, because it has been serialized in some of the UK nationals as well. Is it a lockup? Is shed some sort of very strange abandoned house that he was living in? What was that all about? What was that exactly?
Yeah, It's absolutely incredible place, Giles. It's actually, as you say, it's in East Germany. It's just across the border in Saxony. And it's a former box factory. But I suspect that before that, it was used for other things because there's so many underground parts of this factory. It's about 2 hectares in size with about 7 or 8 outbuildings. And I went had a really good look around it. And I reckon at some point, because I think the nearby town of Braunschweig was where Hitler was first allowed to get a foothold in German politics. And then he rewarded in turn this town, all sorts of ministries. And I think that they are, well, allegedly lots of armaments are built around there. So I think this place could have been used in the Second World War, in the run-up to the Second World War. And Christian Bruckner thought this was a great place to buy and use, supposedly, to store his cars, and he wanted to have an art installation there. But I think, in fact, in the very words of the prosecutor, this would be the perfect place for him to get up to horrible sex crimes, and nobody would hear anything. It's so isolated that, you know, he could do what he wanted.
You also spoke to some of Bruckner's former friends, former girlfriends, former flatmates. I mean, how forthcoming, how do you track them down, and how forthcoming were they in talking about him?
Oh, Giles, you know the dark arts. No, I'm joking. I mean, basically, you know, it was a case of locating people. You know, the classic gumshoe. You just go around and start talking to people, and then someone says, oh, you've met so-and-so. I mean, myself and Lawrence Dollymore, you remember our former news editor and digital editor, we spent the best part of a week and a half in Portugal looking around, trying to find places he used to live, and track down a whole series of interesting characters who knew him. And some of them were very charmed by him, actually. He's a classic, I believe, a classic sociopath, and was able to schmooze, on one hand, people who thought he was wonderful, really charming. But then on the other hand, they could see that he had a very darker side when he got drunk, and how he would sort of suddenly switch. So it was kind of interesting getting to know people who knew him. And I've always found it fascinating to understand people. And it, you know, the best way to do that is obviously to talk to people who know that person, right?
So where is he now then, to the best of your knowledge? Where is Christian Bruckner at the moment?
Fortunately for us, Giles, he's in the Alcatraz of Germany. It's Oldenburg Prison, somewhere in the middle of federal Germany. And he's got a 7-year sentence, which he was found guilty of raping a 72-year-old woman, bless her, American lady, who was very, very nice, educated lady. And he was found guilty because a hair was found in her house, one of his hairs, along with plenty of other evidence, actually, that puts him there. And so fortunately, he's not going to be getting out, I don't think, till at least 2026 or potentially 27. So the police in Germany have plenty of time to build their case against him. And I think this is something that's come up over the weekend, actually. There were 4 stories yesterday coming primarily from Christian or friends of his, saying that it's not true that my book says that, you know, he's had fire, he's being investigated in 5 different cases, and it's not true, there's not a shred of evidence. But the truth is that's come from the prosecutor, and there's plenty of evidence to suggest that he was involved in other crimes, Giles. And I don't want to go into these crimes because, you know, it's morning here and there'll be families listening to this. But read the book and you can hear about why we know he was probably involved in these 5 different crimes, and potentially many, many more.
And you've written various books on various individuals before, thinking, of course, about the murders of Rossio and Sarah, of course. Years ago.
Tony King.
Yeah, Tony King.
I know, cheery stuff, isn't it? Interestingly, this is my 3rd book. It's a crime book. And the first one was on Tony King, the Costa Killer, as he was called. And luckily, in between, I wrote the book about restaurants.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, in 2007, I mean, you're a father yourself. You know, at the time, you had 2 young children. Something like that must stick with you. What do you hope you're going to bring with A, the publication of this book, and B, hopefully, documentary coming out sooner rather than later?
Yeah, well, actually, funny enough, I've just been helping with a couple of documentaries, one English and one German. I'm continuing to do stuff on it, actually. And, you know, as a father, as you said, I had a very young child at the time who was just turning 2 that year. And my second child hadn't been born. But yeah, to me, it just struck a chord, Giles. It moved me. It really moved me. And, you know, you go to press conferences and, you know, you see lots of stuff as a journalist, don't you, and carrying things, and you just get on with your job. You know, the fires recently were really upsetting, you know, seeing that fire take root in the state of Ameca and grow. And we were all, you know, watching, and there was our reporting. I think you were reporting on it as well. And, you know, that was sad. But also that press conference on the first night in 2007, seeing, you know, Kate and Jerry holding it together, it was just so moving. And then just clearly as the case unraveled, it became to me so obvious that she'd been snatched by almost certainly a paedophile gang. And I think that's the kind of theory that most people now assume was the case. I've had people criticize me and say, oh, paedophiles don't do that sort of thing. Really? Well, actually they do occasionally, sadly. It happens. And, you know, what we try to do now, Giles, is through the book, is there's 130,000 words in there. I know it's selling nicely. It's quite consistently selling, and it will continue to sell, I hope. And I hope people will pick it up and look at it and read it. And hopefully, maybe they can think laterally. Maybe they know someone who knew him or knew something. They might have known who he'd phoned that night outside the Ocean Club, because he was right outside just an hour and a half before she went missing. And who did he phone? No one knows who he phoned. Of course, he's not given us an alibi yet, what he was doing that night and where he was going. So just, there will be people out there, there always are, that will know something more and will be able to help the police with their inquiries.
The book is called My Search for Madeline. It's by John Clark, who we've been speaking to this morning. John, if people want to get hold of the book and also find out more about what the latest developments, where can they go online? Where can they download the book? Where can they buy the book?
Well, I published it on Amazon. So it's on regular Kindle ebook on Amazon. And also you can buy the paperback in most formats on Amazon. You can also buy it in three bookshops so far on the coast, and it's increasingly going out to more of the good English bookshops on the coast. So, you know, it's going to be one of those ones that hopefully will just get out there and trickle out and stay out until they convict him of doing this.
The book is called My Search for Madeline. It's by John Clark. John, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thank you very much for your time, Giles. I really appreciate it.